What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care, so sit back, relax, and defocus.
Greetings, colleagues, and welcome to the Defocus Media Podcast. My name is Daryl, and along with me is the lovely Jennifer Lyerly. And today we have a very special guest. We have the man that's going to answer all the questions in regards to the Essilor and Luxottica merger. Friends and family, I'd like to welcome Dr. Howard Purcell.
Hi, everybody. Hello, Jen. Hello, Daryl. Good to be with you guys.
So, Dr. Purcell, thank you so much. We know you've been doing a lot of media coverage, and we appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to talk with us today.
It's absolutely my pleasure.
So, first, we just want to introduce you to our audience and let them get to know you as a person a little bit better. Dr. Purcell is the Senior Vice President of Customer Development with Essilor. Tell us a little bit about your background as an optometrist and how you started working at Essilor in the first place.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So, my background goes back to my father being an optometrist, spending time around his office down in South Florida. In Miami Beach. So I'm a second-generation optometrist. Started practice with my father in 1984 after graduating from New England College of Optometry. And spent 10 years in private practice. Then I spent 5 years in the academic side. I was the chief of the cornea and contact lens program at Nova Southeastern University and then the deputy dean of the institution. After that, I moved to Johnson & Johnson to the contact lens business where I spent 13 and a half years there. And I will have my 9th anniversary with Essilor tomorrow. How about that?
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, I can't keep a job. That's what it sounds like, I think, right?
What made you want to move out of the academic setting into the really more the business side of optometry?
You know, Jen, I get that question a lot, and it was really never my intention. I never had any aspirations. I enjoyed so much teaching. I was inspired by students. I thought I would actually spend my entire career in academia, and probably would have, except for the fact that one day I'm sitting in the clinic seeing patients with students and got a call completely out of the blue from a wonderful guy named Dr. Stan Yamani. Stan had been part of the Vistacon J&J team for quite a while and was looking to grow his team. And kind of the funny short story, I'll make it a short story, was he said, you know, maybe you ought to consider coming working for us. And I started giving him names of all these other people I worked with that I thought would be much better for the position than me. I was pretty young in my career. And I remember actually telling him, you know, I don't really think this is right for me. I went home and told my wife, yeah, I got a call from Johnson & Johnson today suggesting maybe I look at an opportunity to work there. And she said, are you crazy? Why don't you at least go meet them and talk to them? I really never aspired to be in industry at all. But I went up to Jacksonville where the Vistacon team was and met everybody there, and I was completely inspired by what they were doing and the fact that I could perhaps have a broader input into our profession. And probably the best part about it was I went back to my boss at the college and he basically said, look, if you hate it, you can come back. So it was one of those no-lose situations. I wound up staying for 13 and a half years and I really enjoyed it.
Awesome. Well, so obviously the big news that you've been kind of dubbed as the spokesperson of is the merger between Luxottica and Essilor. You said you've been with Essilor for 9 years, but you're just really getting to know Luxottica. Is that right?
Well, that's true. And the fact is this deal really hasn't even closed. So I think it's important for your listeners to know that we're really restricted in what we can do and even getting together with any type of planning until the deal closes. So that'll happen probably sometime before the end of the year. And that will then really allow us over the probably following 3 years to begin to look at the opportunities that will exist. But that certainly hasn't stopped me from trying to think creatively and imagine the kinds of opportunities we'll have in the future. So I've been doing a lot of thinking around that. Obviously, I'm familiar with Luxottica. As most your listeners are, and I'm sure you guys are, it's certainly been a significant player in our industry. But I am getting to know the players a lot better, and I've been impressed. They're very focused on the customer, very focused on brands, which we think is important as well, and the value of brands. And I think most of us do. You know, we struggle at times to help consumers understand the value of premium brands and why they're paying more for one product versus the other. And I think it's important. And we continue to educate consumers on the differences in product. You look at anything you buy a dress, you buy a suit, you buy a tie, you buy a car. I mean, there are different quality products. And as a result, why would we think that would be any different in our industry? But I think we have some extra work to do, given maybe some of the stories that have run historically about, well, basically they're all the same, so why would you pay more? I think we all know there's a big difference. And I think it's important that we share that and that we help educate consumers. And I see that as one big opportunity that we have as we start over time to come together as companies to share our passion for the brands, and we believe our customers' passion for the brands, and helping consumers to understand that there are differences, and that the more you learn about it, the more you realize those differences truly make a difference in performance, in longevity of products, in quality of products. So I think that's an important message, and one that I hope as a group we'll be able to even put a louder voice behind.
Absolutely. That's great insight. You know, for our listeners, could you give a good overview of just Essilor as a company? You know, some of the companies that you guys own, what you truly do. It seems like you're massive. I know you have your hands in everything. Could you just give us a good overview of the entire brand?
We're massive and we have our hands in everything. Signs sound somewhat negative. So let me say this. First, and I know you didn't mean it that way, Daryl, but you know, I deal with this a lot because of our size. And look, our size is, we've grown because of the support we get from the industry, because of independent practitioners that have supported this company for such a long time. And that's why we've gotten to the size we have. And I really think big doesn't have to be bad. I think big can be good, because I would like to think we bring more resources to the table. We bring an assortment and a variety of products to the table that we hope can make our colleagues even more successful in what they do. But let me directly answer your question. So Essilor is essentially made up of two major components, and I could speak mostly to the U.S., but what I'm going to tell you is generally relevant around the world. Our business is in the lens side. That's the bulk of our business is in our branded products, Verilux, Crizal, Transitions, Experio. Those are our primary brands. And on the other side of the business is our lab services. So if you really boil it all down, that's truly what Essilor is. We're made up of lab services and lenses. Now, our business has grown, there's no question. So we have different family members that represent different branded lens products and different labs. We have in our lab network labs that are wholly owned by Essilor. We have labs that we call our partner labs. And those are labs we would own a certain percentage of. But the people who have built those wonderful labs remain, still own a certain percentage of the lab, and run the business. Because our business is not about coming in and saying, we've just bought you, we're now going to make you Essilor, we're going to so-called Essilorize you. We've never believed that that's the approach that's going to benefit our customers, namely our end user wearers and our ECPs. We believe that keeping that competitive spirit, we believe that when we acquire a company, we acquire them because of the good things that they do in most cases. And as a result, we want them to keep doing those things. So not too long ago, your listeners may be aware, we acquired VisionSource, PERC, and OptiPort. These are alliances that I'm sure you guys are very familiar with. We truly believed that by aggregating independent optometry the way they've done, we can keep independent optometry strong over the long term. But very important to note, and I'm sure you could speak, it's now been 18 months since we've acquired VisionSource. We by no means have come in to say, okay, now that we own you, you're going to use our products, you're going to do things the way we tell you to do it. I think that would be a huge mistake for us, and I would encourage you to speak to anybody over on the VisionSource side. That certainly has not been our approach. And lastly, I would say we have invested in the e-commerce side, and namely because as a company, and I think this is an important message. You know, when I was in practice, if I was looking at planning for my practice, planning for my business, I'd look out a year, maybe 2 years if I was really being creative in my thinking. In the industry side where we are, we have to look out 10 to 15 years and try to understand what are the factors that are going to influence independent practice in the future, because candidly, almost 80% of our business comes from the independent. So if we're not looking out for the independent, then we are all at risk, both the independent practice and the core and majority of the Essilor business. So looking out 10 to 15 years, we saw e-commerce. And by the way, we invested in e-commerce now, it's going to be about 8 years ago, almost 8.5 years ago. We saw this coming. We saw it to be a potential threat. And what we wanted to do was try to prepare the independent practice to be able to participate in this new channel of trade. Now, I will tell you, 8.5 years ago, it was not an easy message. When I went out 8.5 years ago talking about e-commerce and trying to convince colleagues this is something we need to participate in, we need to offer to our patients, let's just say it was not well received. And that would be probably one of my bigger understatements that I'll probably make with you today. People were angry, they weren't happy. Today, I think we see that omnichannel is the future, that having brick and mortar and an online offer to the consumer is truly what they're looking for. I'll give you even a more concrete example about that. If we look at showrooming and webrooming, these are two terms I've become much more familiar with through the years in trying to understand the space better. What we were all afraid of was showrooming. And essentially what showrooming means is I come into your office, I look at a frame, I take all the measurements, I get the name of the frame, I go home and I buy it online. That's what we were concerned about. Truly, that's actually not what's happening today. I even ask your listeners to think about their own habits. What's happening today is what is usually referred to as showrooming. Webrooming. And webrooming essentially means I'm going to go online first, educate myself a little bit more, have time to peruse and look at different, for example, frames that I might like and, you know, virtual try them on, etc. But when it actually comes to the buying activity, I'm going to walk into that office and buy because I want someone to help me with it. I want it to be adjusted. I want to make sure it's the right frame for me. So we saw that and really we're trying to see how do we position independent optometry to play that role. And I'll tell you, if you don't believe me, I mean, look at what's happened. If you look at the big players out there who swore they would never open up a single brick and mortar store, all of them now opening brick and mortar stores because they understand that omnichannel is critical. And by the way, they're about as good as brick and mortar stores as we are at e-commerce. They're just not good at it. We have a clear advantage when it comes to that. So today, that's kind of the things that make up the SLR business. There are other components. We have a equipment business and several other things, but the bulk of the business is made up of our lab and lens services, and that's what we focus the majority of our time, attention, and dollars on.
So we're going to kind of try to have this conversation a little bit differently than what you've had on some other news organizations because Daryl and I, we are a member of the younger generation of optometrists. And like you said, we've got to think 10, 15 years in the future. We'll still be practicing in kind of like the heyday of our practicing age probably. And we've got to be there with you. So this merger, it's happening. We were all on the train tracks together. So we want to kind of get a feel for what your vision, what Essilor's vision, what's the best possible way that optometry can grow with the merger as it is. So we're going to ask this line of questions with that concept in mind. What do you see as the real advantage for patients? If we're talking patient care first, what can our patients benefit from a merger like this?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I've probably had a little bit more time to think about this than the average person has because I've been aware of it for a little bit longer. So perhaps I can share maybe two or three things that I start to think about around this. And my hope would be it would stimulate your listeners to start to think creatively about how we can use this opportunity in a positive way. So I'll start off with innovation. Our company, and we're very proud of the fact that for the past 6 years now, we've been recognized as one of the most innovative companies in the world. And we take that very seriously and try throughout our company to look at innovation. So I ask you to think a little bit about history. Historically, frames have been innovated over here and lenses have been innovated over here. And we've not been able to come together and bring innovation into one to say, you know, one cannot survive without the other, right? I need lenses in order to see, but I have to hold them in something, so I need a frame. A frame is the fashion part of it, that's great, but without the lenses that help you see, they can't function. So we need each other. We have this sort of symbiotic relationship. But from an R&D and an innovation standpoint, we've not been able to sit at the same table and innovate together. That's exciting for me. I start thinking about the opportunities to bring these innovative approaches together in order to create some really unique ways that our end user can benefit. Because our end user looks at them as one, but we historically as an industry have looked at them very separately. And I think that creates some real opportunities. Think also the next step of that as it relates to wearables. Today, I mean, I'm here, I'm wearing my Fitbit around my wrist, and it's great, and I love it. But think about the opportunities we have to have a wearable on our face, in front of our eyes, around our ears, touching our nose. I mean, think about the opportunity, the information, the vehicle that this could be for so much more than what we're able to execute today. So the first thing for me is all about innovation. It's how do we innovate in a way that makes sense for our end user and a way that includes our dispensers and our doctors who can contribute to this. That, to me, starts to get me pretty jazzed up and excited. And by the way, both companies do own some significant IP in the area of wearables. So this brings us to the table with an opportunity to really be creative. And maybe I should say here before I forget, we are creating an advisory committee that's going to help input into the direction we're going over time and to try to prioritize the things that we think are really important. And I would love, if there are listeners to your show and even the two of you are interested in contributing to this advisory committee, we would love it. We need that future of this profession to input on these because, as you mentioned very appropriately earlier, probably going to affect them as much as anybody in terms of the generational changes. So we would love to have that sort of input. But I see a huge opportunity there. For me, that represents probably one of the biggest opportunities we have. I also see supply chain as an opportunity. I've talked about this a little bit before, but in the context here of just saying we have an outdated process with supply chain, bringing and more specifically, bringing that frame and that lens together. You know, today it could take a week, 10 days with more sophisticated products to make that happen. That's crazy in a world where today we expect that we can order something in the morning, and if we're in a metropolitan area, it could perhaps be delivered to our house by later that afternoon. Why can't we do those kinds of things around frame and lens? And I do believe we can by looking at supply chain in a very different way. I can tell you from the Essilor standpoint, I certainly can't as of yet speak to the Luxottica side, but we have brought in some expertise in this area that we've never had before to really help us from the side of supply chain. So that's a couple. You know, there are many more, I think, engaging the consumer and some other things that we can do. But I hope that at least those two things start to get the juices flowing around, wow, the opportunities we have here are immense in being able to better serve our patients, better serve our customers, make sure that the eye care practitioner is very much engaged in the process, and that we take every opportunity to create efficiencies in the process. Those to me are two, there's many, but those are two things I see as really great opportunities, and we need that input. We need that perspective from your listeners.
You know, I want to talk more about this innovation. In particular, let's talk more about disruptive technology. You know, your Simply Contacts, Alternative, iNetra. What's your thoughts in regards to disruptive technology?
Well, I'm probably a little aberration when it comes to that because although, like most, it scares me, it also gets me pretty jazzed up and excited because I think we have to look at disruptive technologies in terms of how are we going to be able to use them. And let's take Alternative as an example. I want to state up front before I go any further on this because I've talked about this before and had some people misinterpret what I'm saying. Alternative scares me. It scares me for the primary reason that the consumer, the patient, will get the wrong impression about the fact that they're getting a comprehensive eye exam. So I don't like it from that standpoint. But let's move on from there for a minute, Daryl. Let's just start to think about, okay, alternative opportunities like this, online refractions will exist. There's nothing we're going to be able to do to stop them from existing. So where I sit, I have to start thinking about how could we possibly use a technology like that? And again, I appreciate the sensitivities, but I'm going to take it one step further and tell you, here's the kind of thing I think about. Let me give you a potential scenario, okay? Here's a scenario. Your child is out at the beach on Miami Beach where I practiced, and your practice is in Pennsylvania, you're in Philadelphia, and they're out on the beach, a big wave comes over, and this 14-year-old loses his glasses. That patient hasn't been to your office for 8-9 months. They're a progressive myope. The what if side for me, and think about it for a moment from a consumer, from a patient standpoint, what if that patient, that parent, could have little Johnny get on your website, and before you made up that new pair of glasses and sent them to them, you could quickly do a refraction to see, in those 8 months, has little Johnny's prescription changed? We're not doing a comprehensive eye exam, but what we're saying is we're going to provide a service based on these new technologies that are available so that actually, you know what, little Johnny's prescription actually increased a half diopter. The new pair of glasses I'm going to send you, because he had an exam 8 months ago, so he may not necessarily be ready for a new exam, but if I'm going to provide a new pair of eyewear, think about what the parent's view would be if I told them, go on my website, we can do a refraction remotely and just make sure that we have the most accurate prescription before we send you those glasses. That to me represents a way to utilize technology in a positive way, provide a better consumer patient experience. But believe me, I understand the sensitivities, I understand the concerns, but where I sit every day, people come and bring me their new widget. I get to see all the new things that people are developing, that they're bringing to disrupt our space. Some of them will come whether we like it or not, and ultimately we're going to have to figure out ways to utilize it. So I hope the answer is clear. Number one, it scares me. I worry about it. But as I move off of that, in my role, I have to start thinking about how do we use it. That's just one example of perhaps a positive way that we could utilize that type of technology.
Dr. Purcell, I think Daryl and I will both be in agreement on you with this. The only real way that to make these sort of disruptive technologies coexist with us is for us to recognize that they're out there and make them fit into optometry and kind of own the space, point out their weaknesses, and use what's good about them instead of just ignoring or trying to pretend like they're not out there at all. So I agree with you. I mean, you're seeing stuff that we haven't even had access to. The real goal is how can we integrate that ethically and morally into our patient care without hurting the patient in any way?
Absolutely, Jen. No, I think that's the key, and those are the things we have to think about. I appreciate it's an emotional response, and we're going to try to do what we can to slow them down, but the reality is it won't go away, and ultimately we are going to have to sit at the table. This is my personal opinion, by the way. This is Howard Purcell speaking, not Essilor necessarily. I'm just saying my personal opinion is that ultimately we're going to have to sit at the table and find, as you very well described, ethical ways, things that we're comfortable with, make sure the disclaimers are appropriate and all the things that need to take place. But in the end, many of these are not going away. I mean, I'll give you another example, a kiosk. I mean, those things scare me to death, right? To have somebody be able to walk up to a kiosk and somehow either get a auto refractor finding or something of that nature. Great, I see the tremendous downside, no question. But let me give you another possible scenario. What if you, Jennifer, could have your practice, your private practice in where you are in your neighborhood, but you could have remote areas set up throughout your community where you make it so convenient. And by the way, it would have your name on it so your patient knows this is Jennifer, this is Dr. Jennifer's, you know, Dr. Lyerly's practice that is watching this, that is monitoring it, that is going to make sure things are accurate. What if you could have these remote places where if someone wants to buy a pair of Plano sunglasses, you could offer that to them and they wouldn't always have to necessarily drive to your office. These are the ways I believe we have to start thinking about things. They won't go away. We can resist them for as long as we want to, but ultimately we have to come up with creative ways of incorporating them into what we do. And I believe your generation is going to help us so much with that. My generation, you know, we're a little set in our ways. We're very traditional in how we handle things, but people like you guys are going to be the ones that are going to help us get over some of the emotion and figure out ways to enhance that consumer, that patient experience. The patient experience in our office today, and look, we're among our own here, so I think I can say this, it's not the most exciting experience there ever was. I mean, I'd love to talk to you about virtual reality. I'd love to talk to you about AI. These are things that are going to change our profession in a big way, and it's going to be people like you guys and the people you represent and your listeners that are going to help us get comfortable with that kind of stuff. It's really exciting, and it will change the experience and, in fact, actually drive people to have a greater desire to get in their car, drive to our office, because we're asking a lot to have them do that, particularly with all of the other alternative options they're going to have.
So I know this is very early on still in the merger discussions. Essilor historically has always been very good about including optometry, private practice optometry specifically, but in their marketing, the lens is a function, has a medical advantage to the patient and the doctor is prescribing it. On the converse side, I would say most people, if they're generous, would say Luxottica, not necessarily a friend to optometry. Maybe some would go so far as to say an enemy to private practice, which, you know, everyone's got an opinion on that sort of stuff. But with the merger discussions, are you getting a feeling that they're interested in incorporating the doctor into their branding and promoting their particular lens brands now?
So the best answer I could give you, short answer, is going to be it's a little early to say. But let me point one other thing that I start to think about that gets me excited about the possibility of a lot of positive things coming from this. 2 weeks ago, essentially, Luxottica didn't have much skin in the game as it related to independent optometry, perhaps you could argue other than IMED. Over time, I believe, because they are now invested in it. I mean, think about it. These people are smart business people. Mr. Delvecchio is not a dummy when it comes to business. He's grown an amazing empire, right? He has now skin in the game to see independent optometry do well. That excites me because he wants to see it do well. He's invested. He's got money now in the game to say, I want to see now independent optometry grow because as a result of that, I will do better. So I would say to you, we're in a better position than perhaps we were 2 weeks ago. Time will tell. And by the way, that works on the other side. There may be some things that people haven't loved about Essilor, things that are opportunities for us that we're going to be able to learn for our, from our friends from Luxottica. Think about merchandising. Think about some of the things that relate to selling and things that they are, you know, we could argue a lot of things, but they are really good at that. So I think it really works both ways. This, to me, creates opportunities on both sides. Bottom line for me, I believe we're in a better position right now today than we were 2 weeks ago to address just the things you've just asked about.
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah. Daryl, I'm sure you feel the same way, but like in the past, private practice has really kind of had to separate itself as, oh, we won't be the fashion place to go to, but we'll be the medical place to go to. If there's right. a way that we can incorporate we're the fashion place to go to and we have some support on that, it could expand what we're able to offer to our patients.
Absolutely. And you know, that whole concept of being able to have that fashion and function underneath one umbrella is ideal. But at the same time, you know, a lot of folks are worried about one word, monopoly. That's what we think when we see these two big brands come together. I know the pros that you're bringing to the table, but it's scary. You know, it's very scary. And it's just, it's one of those things where I hope to see it head in the direction of the independent doctor of optometry and make it easier for the patients. But, you know, it's just hard to imagine two massive companies coming together.
Right. No, I absolutely understand the concern. And what I would say to that is, again, I would point to, first of all, I believe we're in a better position today than we've been before. And let me also point out something to you. I mean, you've used that M word, so let me just try to address that a little bit.
When you look it's coming.
No. I don't blame you for asking. I would be surprised if you hadn't. But let's talk about that for a minute. When you look at the two companies, truly the overlap of the two companies is very little. So really the increase in market share, if you will, and those kinds of issues are minimal. Now, look, I'm not an expert. I'm not a lawyer. I can't really comment on what the 38 or 40 different governmental agencies that are going to have to take a look at this are going to decide. But from my view, just as a practitioner, as well as an executive for the company, there's not a lot of overlap. So it isn't like all of a sudden one company's dominating in a certain space. They're very complementary. We are very complementary in terms of the things we bring to the table. As I described to you, we're primarily a lens and lab operation, and they're primarily a frame, if you look at them, operation and managed care. So as a result of that, the overlap to all of a sudden be, oh my gosh, these guys are going to be so dominant in a certain position, I don't see that. Now, again, powers that be and people who deal with this every day will have to make those ultimate decisions. Just giving you my own perspective on it, which is I don't really see that as a big issue personally. And, you know, our team believes we have a pretty good shot at making it happen. But again, this will all happen over time. We'll know better by the end of the year where things sit. But I certainly understand the question. And, you know, I don't know if it's appropriate, but I'd like to throw a question back to you guys, if you don't mind.
Sure.
One of the things I've observed, and it's an interesting phenomenon that I've even seen in my own household, is that the younger generation in many cases believes that big equals bad. Like big corporate, you must be bad. So when I've talked to younger colleagues, I feel like I'm not even starting from zero. I'm starting almost from like a minus 10. And I have to just, you know, be able to explain why. Just give me the benefit of the doubt to start with it. Just because I'm big, I'm bad. Let me show you what I can do. Let me show you what our company does. Let me show you how each and every single account means so much to us. And let me help to demonstrate then that at least give me the chance. And I guess my question to you guys is that fact? I mean, is this a generational thing that we look at big corporate and even before we get to know them, even before we know what they do and the philanthropic side of our business, which we're very proud of, there's sort of this feeling of skepticism, this kind of feeling of, I'm not so sure. These guys are big. They're corporate. That probably is bad. Am I accurate on that? Is that just the misperception I have? What do you guys think about that?
I definitely think that is a very common, and you'll see that a lot in younger optometrists. We're really into independent frame lines. I was actually going to ask this question a little bit beforehand, but there's a part of me that feels like Essilor should be a little concerned. Essilor has a much better reputation in lens quality than what Luxottica has in frame quality. While that's a lot to overcome, most doctors in our generation, if you're going to open up your own private practice, wouldn't want Luxottica frames in their store because they don't believe it's a quality craftsman product. And that's what people in our age group want. If we're going to buy, if we're going to invest in quality eyewear, we want the very best lenses and we want the very best frames. Otherwise, our patient's going to buy the $30 ones at Zenni. They have to feel and see a difference. And so we're hopeful if there is a merger of the sorts, one, Essilor doesn't get diluted in that, and maybe Luxottica would step up their game and produce a lot better quality frames.
Absolutely. We don't want to see a frame that's, you know, a Coach frame, Versace frame, and some other brand, and you put them side by side, and it's the same exact frame, just a different name on the actual frame, and there's completely two different pricing, price points on the frames. You know, we like to see unique designs, quality products, because, again, we're about serving function and fashion, and we want to be able to put a marriage together that makes sense for our patients and charge them the adequate price point for it as well.
And you know what? I think that's completely reasonable, and I appreciate the watch out. It's not come up in a lot of the discussions I've had. I guess there's mixed feelings about quality on either side, but at least I would say this. It gives us an opportunity over time to input, to talk about the things that are important, to challenge the things that we are uncomfortable with. One thing I can assure you, though, is you will not see a reduction in any of the quality, the focus on innovation, the things that we believe has brought Essilor to the forefront and has allowed us to have the success we've had over the years. But when it comes to the fashion side and frame side, I think it's important we do marry the two together, because let's face it, people talk a lot about the frame. You know, the first thing we discuss when a patient's in our dispensaries is not typically the lens. We're talking about choosing a frame. And look, I've seen the two of you guys. You guys are pretty fashion focused. I love the frames you guys are wearing, so I know that's important, and we can't set that aside, but fair challenge. And look, we better make sure on both sides of this deal that we remain focused on quality, we remain focused on our customer and making sure we serve our customer well. So it's a fair comment, but I hope that over time we'll have a chance to input on both sides to make sure we keep everybody honest in this deal.
So I feel like, Dr. Purcell, you are our advocate. You get to sit in the room and talk to these people. As an optometrist, you have a vested interest in optometry. So I'd like to discuss a few things that, you know, might come up in those meetings and how you feel like you might be able to help optometry achieve these goals. I mean, one of the potential advantages of a merger between Luxottica and Essilor is maybe it would help private practice doctors compete a little bit better on pricing. Maybe we could get a more advantageous pricing strategy on Luxottica frames, which is, besides the quality, another reason why doctors don't carry them in their office. Is that something that you feel like they might be open to, or that you feel like Essilor can help negotiate?
Jen, you're getting pretty good at this journalist thing. I'm impressed.
Thank you.
probably the best way I could answer this is to say it's very premature for me to start to, or even to begin to try to make a comment about pricing and where pricing will be and where it can go. And I'll just try to point you back to the fact that we will be able to sit down at the table. We will have an advisory committee. If this is the most important thing and the thing we want to see these two organizations come together to provide, then I think we need to listen and try to find ways to do it. But at this point, to comment on that, I'd be really commenting on something I have no business commenting on. Now, if you're just saying my opinion, I think it's important. I think we need to find ways. When we talk about pricing of things, and, you know, I think Daryl mentioned earlier something about, you know, you got the same frame and it's, you know, you put a brand name on it and it's you charge more for it. I'm not so sure that's fact, and I think it's something we need to understand better. But as I look at any product that we buy, I mean, you know, you're wearing a nice shirt, Daryl. I mean, you're wearing a beautiful dress, Jen. That dress, you know, you could have paid a couple $100 for, and you could go to another store where it's made of a different material, it's of a different quality. You could pay $800-$900 for. In all of our life, in everything we do, we have those kinds of choices. What I think you're saying, and I hear you loud and clear, is we need to keep people honest. What we don't want to be paying for is something that is exactly the same. I don't believe that to be the case, but you know what? Over time, we're going to learn a lot more about that. What I can speak to is lenses, and that is absolutely not the case. We try to provide a variety of pricing so that we address those 2.5 billion people in the world who don't have access to care, who don't have money to be able to afford premium brands. And I'm very proud of the Essilor Vision Foundation and what it does around the world to help address that. But the reality is there are differences, and I can speak to lenses. Let me tell you, in terms of the quality, in terms of the visual performance, the optics, there are big differences between an $80 lens and a $380 lens. But you need to keep us honest on that, and we need to continue to make sure we can prove and show you the differences. And perhaps that's an area we could do better in showing some of the science. And again, I would pose this, you know, interesting observation for me. I'd love you guys' comment on this. When I worked as a practitioner, if there was a pharmaceutical that someone was delivering to my office, there is no way I would would use that pharmaceutical product unless there was solid evidence and data to support the fact that it's safe, that the efficacy is there, all the things that I know we all look for. Then I moved into the contact lens world, and I found that the same thing existed there. People were not willing, colleagues were not willing to prescribe a contact lens unless there was good, solid science, and you could show me the rates of infection, the rates of complications. One thing I find really interesting in this space, in the lens space, is there seems to be a very different approach when it comes to lenses. There's not a great desire to have the science behind it. Because I will tell you, I'm very proud of the science our company does. But when we try to walk in and try to show colleagues science around spectacle lenses, it's kind of a ho-hum, all right, whatever. I would encourage all of us to challenge the spectacle lens industry. It's the one I can speak the most to here and down the road over time. Hopefully I can speak more to the frame side, but today I can speak to the lens side. We need to challenge the lens companies. Show me the data. Show me what you've done to prove why that's a better product. Honestly, I believe it plays very well to Essilor's business because we do a ton of science. We do a lot of work in that area. But I believe our colleagues need to challenge the spectacle lens side of the business just like they do pharmaceuticals and contact lenses.
I'm going to ask you one more as a personal optometrist, like person to person, instead of, I know you can't speak for what Essilor's real plans are. Do you feel like there's any sort of priority being set on increasing payments to like vision source doctors or things like that from iMed insurance? If we're all under the same umbrella, do you think that they would prioritize?
I think the prioritization needs to be done by our customers. I think this advisory committee, that will be its role, and one of its main roles, in my opinion, is to say, we've got 100 things we'd like to see. We'd like to see Essilor do some of these. We'd like to see Luxottica do some of these. I think it's critically important we identify what are those top 3, 4, or 5 that we think we can wrap our arms around. In the end, if it's all about reimbursement for the eye exam, which I believe is a very important issue, but the more you dig into it, you recognize the challenges there. And I'm not trying to defend anyone here, but there are significant challenges. But in the end, if that is the number one thing we say, that is the thing we need to change. It's one of the first things we need to address. I believe that advisory committee will have the ability to push that issue, to challenge it, to learn as much as they can about it, and to help make the best decisions they can. That is one I hear a lot, Jen. There's no question. In the 2 weeks now, we've had this opportunity to speak together about where we're going and where this is going to lead us. That has come up nearly in every conversation. So I believe it is probably one of the higher priority items. And again, I know I'm going to start to sound like a broken record, but again, I believe we're better in a better position than we were 2 weeks ago to input on both sides and over time perhaps have some ability to adjust and adapt those things.
I think you're right. I think why you're getting asked that so much is before, Luxottica really didn't have a vested interest in private practice. We knew we weren't going to be able to get any better payment from iMed. Now we might have a chance. So that idea that maybe something good could happen for optometry out of this, of course, it's making doctors real anxious and they want to be excited, but then they're scared to get their hopes up too.
Right. No, absolutely. And you know, the thing I would say is, you know, you have representation. We have representation on the iMed side, Dr. John Lahr being one example of that. I think, you know, if people have concerns about that, even today, you guys, you know, colleagues, we should pick up the phone, call John, tell him how you feel about it. Tell him the concerns you have. I think that's important. People are not reluctant at all to pick up the phone and share with me some of the things they don't love about Essilor. And you know what? And I'm so happy you said this. I do see myself as the representative of optometry inside of Essilor. And I need to hear those things. In order to be the best representative for you that I can be, I need to hear from you. And I really appreciate, I've gotten a lot of calls over, as you can imagine, over the past 2 weeks with people who really are sharing with me the things they would like to see, the concerns that they have. But I think that needs to happen on both sides of this new entity. And I would really encourage even tomorrow for your listeners to say, you know what, if that's something they truly believe is important. And let me just add one other thing to that, because I think this will help to put it in perspective. When I was in practice, in my little practice in Miami Beach, and I had a concern about something a company was doing, in my mind it was like, really, if I pick up the phone and call these guys, I'm this little practitioner in Miami Beach, do they really care about what I think? So that was kind of my perspective. Now that I've spent 20 plus years in industry, both at J&J and Essilor, I realized something that I did not realize when I was there, that so few people take the time to give their feedback that when you do, it actually has a pretty profound impact, an impact that goes far beyond what you might think. And that was a real awakening for me. So I would encourage your listeners and the two of you to say, if there are issues that are important to you, pick up the phone, call people. And, you know, there's this discussions we have with each other, but talk to the people who have the ability at the companies to have some influence. So few people do it. It's really important. So thanks for the opportunity to say that. And thanks for the question. It's an important one, but that's an observation I've made in transitioning from independent practice to industry that was new for me. I didn't realize it, and perhaps others don't realize it as well.
So what's next for Essilor and I guess Luxottica as well? I mean, you have the frame company, you have the lens company. Are we thinking about a contact lens company next?
You know, we're always looking for opportunities that are going to help provide a better partnership with particularly our independent customers, as that's the focus of our business. If you look at our history, we are an acquisition company, we're an innovation company. So, you know, a lot of things are on the table, but something I learned a few years ago that I find very interesting and I think will help answer the question. You know, people talk about sort of your core business and then how many kind of rings beyond the core you go with your business. And I want to try to be as clear as I can on this. So when you work in your core business, our core business being lenses, and you make acquisitions within the spectacle lens side, that's your core business, and your likelihood for success is very significant. Each rung you go out beyond your core competencies, and this is very well documented, your likelihood for success in those acquisitions goes down dramatically. So for us to get into businesses that are too far beyond our core competencies, A, our likelihood for success goes down, and B, the distractions that create probably are detrimental. So I think what you'll see is us continuing to try to build a portfolio that strengthens our customers' ability to have a voice, to get the kind of products they need, to make greater efficiencies in things we've already talked about, like supply chain and innovation. I think those are the kinds of things you'll see. It's less likely that you'll see us start to play in areas that go 2-3 rungs beyond our core competencies. Did I explain that okay? Because I've lived it. I just want to make sure I'm clear on that, because that's an important concept that I learned a few years ago that really makes a lot of sense. And if you see companies who've made acquisitions that have been unsuccessful, typically it's because they've gone a little bit too far beyond their core.
Yeah, basically stay in your lane.
To some extent. You might want to go one lane on either side, but you start to get out 2-3 lanes, and yeah, that gets a little complicated. Yeah, absolutely. And you got someone on the diving board landing on you, you know?
Right.
So speaking of lanes, I'm going to ask you one more. I mean, this is one you've gotten a ton. A lot of people see this very easy to picture future where Luxessilor, whatever we're going to call the merger, has like this premium eyewear online retail presence where you can get your Essilor lenses, progressives, Physio 360 with transitions, and everything from the drop-down menus. And then patients come to the office and you're talking about, we have these great premium products that you can't get online, but now you can get them online. I mean, I know you are not probably going to be able to answer this question specifically in any way, but do you feel like Essilor and maybe Luxottica, if you can speak for them at all, value that some premium products need to be specific to eye care offices?
Without a doubt. I just, you know, I can say certain things and tell you that that won't happen and that is not the direction we're looking to go in, but I would ask you to look at our history and what we've done. When we've made acquisitions in the e-commerce space, just as an example, we have immediately removed our premium brands from those properties. So look at our history, look at what we've done. I don't anticipate anytime soon that that's going to change. Look, I can't prognosticate to the next 50 years, but what I can tell you is it really doesn't make sense for us to do that. And look at where we put our money where our mouth is. We're out there advertising our premium brands and driving people to where they can get those, which is primarily in the independent practice. One more just example of why that really doesn't make sense. Let's say today we were to do that. We were to take somebody who's going to go into either a private practice or even a retailer, and then we're going to send them to our online property to buy. It really from a business standpoint doesn't make sense. Because if you think about it, the profitability, even if you believe we're just money-grubbing slobs, which I hope nobody believes, but even if you believe that, for us it doesn't make sense because we're taking a product that we all make more margin on and we're sending them to a property that doesn't offer that, that makes a very small margin. So from a pure business standpoint, that doesn't make sense. But I mean, I certainly understand your question and I appreciate that there's concerns that exist there. But I'll also say to you, we've invested millions and millions of dollars in acquiring, for example, a vision source and a perk that represents independent optometry. It would be crazy for us to then try to undermine that growth in order to create some profitability somewhere else. Just from a business standpoint, it doesn't make sense. So from two answers I would give you. One, I'm telling you that there's no plans to change our policy as it relates to that, number one. And number two, just look at it from a business standpoint and look at how we've acted. You know, there's a lot of companies out there saying, you know, they're your partner and they're your best partner. I would ask people to look at who's actually trying to grow the industry. Think about your eyes. Hasn't come up in our discussion today, but I do want to mention it for a minute. A program that when my dad started practicing, we wanted something like that. We got to get out there and tell the consumer, tell the potential patients the importance of the eye exam. No proprietary product involved at all, just importance of the eye exam. Who's put their money into that? Look at the companies that are doing that. I would suggest to you those are the companies that independent practitioners should be supporting. Look at who's going out to the consumer, not trying to take one business from another, not going and saying, you know what, I know I've been using those guys, bring them over here. Who's trying to grow the business by going out and advertising why premium brands are important? What's Crizal? What's Verilux? What's Transitions? I think we have to look at actions. I mean, there's great marketing out there, and I believe me, I appreciate great marketing. But in the end, what I hope we all look at is who's putting their money where their mouth is, who's out there truly helping to support it. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that I definitely want to hear from people. I want to make sure that they know, as I know we're starting to wind down here, where they can access us. So ask Essilor at EssilorUSA.com. I'll say that one more time. So it's ask Essilor at EssilorUSA.com. We read every single one of the comments that comes through there. We will do our best to get back to people. And it's a great way that if you don't want to call me on the phone or you don't want to try to find an email to send directly to me, this is a great way to get it out there. We'll get it to the right people. We'll try to get the best answer. And it will help us to kind of keep a pulse on what people are thinking. So I know it was a little off of your question, but it just reminded me. I wanted to make sure people knew that they can access us in many different ways. But the Ask Essilor at EssilorUSA.com is a great way to send comments, feedback, positives, negatives, concerns, whatever may be on their mind.
Thank you so much, Dr. Brazil. I know you have been so generous of your time with us. I want to ask you just one more question and then we'll wrap up. We are a podcast that's primarily new graduate and young ODs and optometry students. What would you say this merger might do to really help? We're 25-year-old, we're just opening cold, it's our brand new practice. How is the merger going to help us be successful?
Well, I shared a few things, so let me take it maybe to the next level and start to talk to you. And I mentioned these very briefly, but maybe sort of whet your appetite on a couple things. Virtual reality. Think about the exam today. We use a technique where we say, you're going to look at a perfectly contrasted, perfectly illuminated chart. You read five letters at a certain size, which, by the way, that standard was established in the mid-1800s as to what normal vision should be. And if you can read those five letters, we pat you on the back and we send you on your way. Think about that from two standpoints. One, is it realistic to think that that's the best we could do, number one? And number two, what is the experience the patient's having and how great of an experience? So I'm going to give you a what if. What if we could use virtual reality? What if instead when Mrs. Jones comes in and she says, I play tennis, I work on a computer, and I drive my kids to school, that I could put Mrs. Jones behind in a virtual reality environment or even an augmented reality environment. So she's now on a tennis court. She's now behind the wheel of a car. She's now behind a computer. And I can assess her visual performance in the world that she participates in. By the way, this is not that far-fetched. This is something that your colleagues, your peers will see in their practice lives. We'll be able to be so much more specific and individualized in the way we assess visual performance. That's one, and that to me is exciting. Which, by the way, with virtual reality, one day we'll be able to scan the retina. We'll be able to check intraocular pressure all through that sort of device. Think about the difference in the experience that someone would have in coming to our office. So that's number one. The second one's AI, and AI is around the corner. So artificial intelligence, it will be a little scary for us But let me make this very clear. AI and everything I've seen around AI, and I've seen this stuff, it is not to replace us. It's as an augment to help us. And let me tell you what I mean by that very quickly. What if at your fingertips, you could have every piece of information you learned from your first day of optometry school to what 2 to 3 minutes ago was published? That you could have that at your fingertips to help make a better decision in patient care. And we all know that outcomes are going to affect our reimbursements in the future and even starting today. So what if we had this tool that we could utilize as an adjunct to our decision making? That would be pretty exciting. This is one application that AI is going to be able to bring. So I see these types of innovations, although a bit scary at times, or although a bit seeming to be futuristic, very much in the wheelhouse of your listeners in terms of their practice lives. So great to start thinking about it now and how you might apply it. So the day someone walks into your office and says, hey, I got this really cool thing, that we don't say, oh my gosh, AI, that's kind of scary. I think that looks like it's something's going to take over for me. I will tell you, everything I've seen is the day our patients become robots, that's when AI will take over for us. But until that time happens, it's just a tool to help you decision make. So two examples, I hope that starts to answer your question. Two examples of, from an Essilor standpoint, things that I have seen since that personally I've experienced that I'm excited about that could really change the way we operate. And I think it's your generation and your peers that are going to help us feel good about those kinds of things that will enhance the experience of the patient and perhaps even our ability to diagnose and treat and provide the best correction, the best protection, the best prevention that we're going to be able to do through eyewear. So exciting stuff. It really is.
Thank you so much for your time. I know you've got to go work. We need you to make those AI charts like really. That would totally give people a reason to come get an eye exam.
There you go. You know what, guys? It's really been a pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity. I really love what you guys are doing. If you'd ever like to have us back to kind of give an update on where things are, you ever have any questions for me, I think this kind of exchange of information is critically important. I appreciate you giving us an opportunity to share our perspective and certainly look forward to future opportunities. So thank you very much.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast and remember, we keep it 2020 around here, pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.